let's start with what this bill is purported to fight, which is domestic terrorism. How does this bill define domestic terrorism, and how does it change the definition already in law?
So it widely expands the definition of domestic terrorism in a way that would allow law enforcement to target groups of citizens who demonstrate in public places. So for one thing, it vaguely suggests that efforts to advance any belief could be categorized under a new definition of domestic terrorism. And it also broadens the definition of terroristic threats to include actions, quote, with the purpose of otherwise causing serious public inconvenience. And the concern is there is no clear definition of a public inconvenience, and there is no clarity on who or what agency gets to define what this entails. So obviously, we are concerned that this bill will be used as a mechanism to further crack down on the rights of people who want to exercise their First Amendment right to protest.
Thrown in at the end of one of the sections of the legislation is, quote, "This code section shall not apply to constitutionally protected speech or lawful assemblies." Do you find that reassuring?
No. That language is there, but if there's some type of an activity, potentially violent activity at one of the protests, other people at the protest who may not be, really involved or behind the violent action could similarly get targeted. So, that language in the context of a broad bill that is designed to crack down on freedom of speech provides no assurance to us.
Now, you've outlined your concerns about the right to peaceably assemble and the right to protest. What about due process concerns?
Right. So agencies under this bill will be required to share information about known or suspected terrorists, and SB1 provides no access to the right to due process for anyone on this list to appeal mistakes or to be removed from this list. I mean, already we've seen what has happened with the no-fly list and the various watch lists on the federal level, where there was, zero to minimum due process for people who were often mistakenly placed on this list, and how really, their lives were wrecked on multiple levels. And so now we're seeing basically a copying of this at the state level.
The bill has lengthy sections on surveillance and subpoena powers. Can you sum up some of the broader points?
Right. So this new Department of Homeland Security that is going to be established on the state level has been empowered with basically monitoring and sharing information about people who could be suspected of engaging in acts of terrorism. So, already we're seeing on the local level, especially a move towards monitoring free speech activities. So just a few weeks ago, we heard reports about Muslim activists being approached by local police and interrogated for, half an hour about their political beliefs. And then when we followed up with them, the local police mentioned that this is part of an outreach effort. So, which very much sounds like a massive surveillance effort to us. And so the concern is that, this new legislation with this new Department of Homeland Security, with a new commissioner, all of the new officials that are going to be based there are going to have even more power to surveil our immigrant, Muslim, and activist communities.
Some have painted this legislation as an anti-hate crimes bill, and this comes as Jewish community centers and mosques around the country have reported incidents ranging from bomb threats to arson to vandalism. There have been cases of South Asian immigrants who have been targeted by violence by perpetrators mistaking them for Muslims. Do you see the political will in Georgia to go after hate crimes, and is this bill conceivably part of that?
Unfortunately, I don't think this bill is going to do anything on that front. I think the hate crimes and unfortunate hateful rhetoric that we're seeing targeted by hate groups at our communities is very much tied to the hateful and racist and Islamophobic rhetoric that has been coming down the federal level, since before the elections. I mean, you can't divorce the two. So, we have a president who has made it a priority to target, both in terms of rhetoric and in terms of policies, Muslim communities and communities of color and queer and trans people. And so there should be no surprise when our communities are actually physically attacked.
Now, on a personal level, as an immigrant from one of the Muslim majority nations on the travel ban list, did you ever imagine seeing something like this transpire in the U.S.?
We've seen this happen before. We saw the internment of Japanese Americans in relatively recent history. We've seen, murder of black individuals by the police. We've seen the crackdown against indigenous communities that are claiming their right to their natural resources. We have seen evidence of this trend of repression coming. And, most disturbingly was a comment by an advisor to Trump after the elections saying something to the effect that internment of Japanese Americans was okay, given the circumstances. I don't ever remember hearing anybody legitimize that in recent history. So, I think we should really look back closely at the history of this country and the repression that has happened, and learn from the resistance that has been able to fight back. And so, not be surprised, but be prepared to fight back.
Azadeh Shashahani is the legal and advocacy director at Project South. She joined me by phone from Atlanta, Georgia. For FSRN, I'm Shannon Young.